You see, in Eulerian coordinates, the issue of blow-up is one for flows which initially have just a limited amount of differentiability. Actually, making a much stronger assumption, for example, that the initial condition is analytic in space doesn't improve the result. One is not able to prove more about that. So in Eulerian coordinates, you cannot have any analytic concept associated to blow up. However, in Lagrangian coordinates, you do. And now you can, let me draw your little picture. This is a time axis. There's a Taylor series, which I constructed for you, which is guaranteed to converge within a certain radius of convergence. That's supposed to be a circle centered at the origin. I'm not very good at drawing. And everything here, every there, the Lagrangian map is well-defined and analytic function of time. But you can go to any place like this and start over again. Then you will have another disk. This is again a circle, etc. This is really a poor one. And it is easy to show that as long as this radius of conversion is positive, you can go further. Therefore, blow up requires that the radius of convergence go to zero. So the radius of convergence, monitoring the radius of convergence, is a way to study blow up. And if you can do that carefully and numerically, you never want to go too close to a singularity because you burn your fingers or your computer. You stay away from the singularity, you go not too close, and you do it with high precision, and then you try to extrapolate carefully. That's the way to do it. So that gives you some idea of how one can do this numerically. All this was invented very recently. So the numerical implementation so far are tests done in two dimensions. But the general principles are absolutely the same in two and in three dimensions. This gives you a flow chart of how one can approach this thing numerically. And the method to do that is known in the numerical literature. On hydrodynamics, of course. There's a class of methods that are called semi-Lagrangian. Some of you, particularly if you are on the geophysical side, may have encountered it. Semi-Lagrangian methods are methods where you try to integrate in Lagrangian coordinates, which has certain advantages that you do not have to face the difficulties that are called the Courant-Friedrichs-Lévy constraint. And then after having performed a suitably large step, you revert to Eulerian coordinates and then you do it again. However, people did not know how to accurately integrate in Lagrangian coordinate because they had forgotten Cauchy. So the actual way of integrating Lagrangian coordinate is a nightmare. There's even a geophysicist who called it an agony. And if you want to achieve any precision by the method that have been developed so far, it's hopeless. At best, you're second order. Here you will see you can go to order 80 if you wish. Okay, so let's go to high orders. That will be the last. Think so. We tested the method in two dimensions. All the theorems I've given you are the same in two dimensions. The only boring difference is that the determinant, instead of being cubic, is quadratic, but that makes not much of a difference. Ah, that's not mine. Okay. No, because I try to switch off all my phones. In two dimensions, there is also a finite radius of convergence of these Taylor series, and you can watch things. So we did a rather simple two-dimensional flow that has four or five harmonics initially, and applied the method in high precision, more precisely in double and quadruple precision. D stands for double, Q for quadruple. And we compare the same kind of quantities calculated by Taylor expansions in Eulerian and in Lagrangian coordinates. In Eulerian coordinates, you cannot do Taylor expansion unless you assume that the initial data is analytic in space. But having only a finite number of harmonics, the initial condition is more than analytic, it's entire. So that wasn't a problem. So here are the results. What is shown here is the L2 norm of the nth Taylor coefficient. Here's the order. Here's the L2 norm. This is not a continuous curve. It's discrete, but it looks continuous. And beyond a certain order, the thing goes completely bananas. This is rounding errors, which depends, of course, on the precision of your calculation. Now, in Eulerian coordinates, if you do it in double precision, it goes bananas at order 10. In quadruple precision, at order 20. In Lagrangian coordinates, in double, you can go to 40. And in quadruple, you can go beyond 80. Why is that? That's quite simple. It's because in Lagrangian coordinates, you do not lose derivatives. In Eulerian coordinates, each time you take a time derivative, you pay for that with a space derivative, a factor of k. And in a spectral method that some of you are familiar with, that means that there's a factor which will vary in strength depending on the wave number between, say, one and several hundreds, if not several thousands. And then to do the calculation with a complexity that is not a real killer, so that you don't have to wait 100 years to get the result, you use so-called pseudo-spectral methods in which multiplications are performed in physical X space, and the solution of Poisson equation and derivatives are calculated in Fourier space, and you go back and forth between the two spaces using fast Fourier transforms. But when you have factors of a few hundred coming in there, and you do fast Fourier transform, you mix everything, and you're losing precision like mad. So this is the reason if you try to do it in the Eulerian coordinates, you're dead. You cannot go to high orders, and therefore you cannot determine the radius of convergence of the series with any reasonable precision that would allow extrapolation. So here you see that Lagrangian coordinates have a great advantage over Eulerian, once you realize that there is no agony in using Lagrangian coordinates. So I'm finished. Thank you.
Would be applicable in dimensions higher than 3 as well.
Oh, yes, of course. Actually, I've never seen a problem where the change in dimension is more trivial. Actually, a code written for the two-dimensional thing, you just have to change a few lines and it becomes a 3D code. Yes. Also, you can do a lot of other problems. I should perhaps mention, I'm assuming that there are a few astrophysicists in this room. At least he is half of an astrophysicist, okay? The same machinery can be applied to the Euler-Poisson equation, which governs the flow essentially of dark matter on very large scales. And the analyticity theorem goes through. The proof is just the same. And therefore, you could also do integration there, numerical integration. What is slightly upsetting is that when you go to other problems, you could think maybe if it works for incompressible fluids and for the highly compressible Euler-Poisson equation, it works for almost anything. No. It doesn't seem to work in magnetohydrodynamics. It doesn't seem to work for barotropic fluids. And when I say it doesn't seem to work, it is not that we were not able so far, but the mechanism of losing derivatives or not losing them seems to be quite different. Actually, there is, when one goes from ordinary incompressible fluids to MHD. In both cases, there is a Lagrangian formulation, a variational formulation. But in the MHD case, it seems that the relabeling symmetry is gone. There's a symmetry breaking that occurs. Some people have even compared it to the symmetry breaking in the Higgs boson. It's not quite the same, but okay. You're probably losing derivatives when a magnetic field is present. That would mean a very substantial difference between the conducting and neutral fluids, but that is still being explored, so nothing has been written on that. And similarly for barotropic fluids, for those who know this, it means a fluid in which the pressure depends only on the density. Yeah. So there are quite a number of interesting things. But this kind of approach is not universal in fluid mechanics, so don't get me wrong. I forgot to say that in cosmology, it works not only in an Einstein de Sitter universe, but it also works when you include a cosmological term. That was proven very recently. But there are other effects whose inclusion may spoil analyticity. I don't know yet.
So here you were interested in, the problem was of singularities, and but if I take Navier-Stokes equations, which have viscosity also inside it, then is there any place where working with Lagrangian coordinates in solving Navier-Stokes?
It is not clear, because if you try to you can modify the Cauchy relations to accommodate viscosity, but then it becomes a real agony, and you would lose derivatives, etc. And almost certainly you're not time analytic, so it's you may be time analytic if the initial condition is analytic in space, but that's a very different kind. So I don't know. There is another way that was discovered by Peter Constantine and collaborators to do viscous fluids without explicit injury. It is a kind of stochastic method where one does a purely ideal fluid, but there is a Brownian term, and then one has to do inverse maps and average over all trajectories, ending up at a certain point. Numerically, it would be a nightmare because it's a Monte Carlo method that you would lose precision immediately, and the last question that you would want to answer this way is blow up. So, I'm not sure that this has much future for this highly hypothetical issue of blow up in Navier-Stokes, whatever Terence Tao may have been writing recently. But for those who know what I mean. You have a question there in the back?
Yes.
I think this gentleman was first.
Sir, if the velocity is not very much, it's negligible.
I'm sorry, say that again.
My question is that if fluid velocity is not that much, it is negligible.
Viscosity, you said?
No, fluid velocity.
What do you mean by negligible velocity?
The fluid velocity is very less at any point.
Well, in an Euler fluid, there is no such thing as a small velocity, because you can always rescale time or velocity. I mean, it's equivalent. So the concept of smallness, there is no dimensionless number such as the Reynolds number. Therefore, speaking about a small velocity in Euler case is not an operational concept. I mean, if you have other effects in addition to the Euler, then it's meaningful, rotation or whatnot.
In that case, is there any particular situation where we can say that Eulerian picture and Lagrangian picture are very close?
That Euler end?
Eulerian picture and Lagrangian picture are very close. Is there any situation?
Oh, no. Certainly not for blow up, so on. No. You would like to the only thing that vaguely resembles what you would like to do is that 2 days ago I succeeded in writing a generalization of Cauchy's, which has two times, it's not just x of t, it's x of, not just x of t and a, it's x of t, I'm sorry, x of a, t and s, namely, which is the position of the fluid particle at time t that was at time s at point a. And if s is equal to 0, it's Lagrangian coordinates. But if s is equal to t, then it's essentially Eulerian coordinates. So one can write an equation there which sort of bridges the Eulerian-Lagrangian gap, but not by a small velocity. Okay, there was another question here.
Yes, this last transparency, is it for compressible fluid too, or only incompressible fluid?
No, the only case we have done so far is incompressible, but I bet it will be the same for compressible, because since we understand why it's doing that, the same reason losing derivatives would apply for a compressible fluid.
Thing outside.
Okay, you want to pick that up? Whoops.